Hey, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Scrotus POTUS. We were talking everything global politics from a U.S. and North American perspective. We have some great guests on for you today. We've got from America, from Idaho, Dave Fulton is here. And we also have from Canada, Craig Campbell. Both the guys, including myself, now live in London, England. We're going to talk about the G20. What's happened with the G20? As Trump has isolated himself. And we're also going to talk about pot, marijuana, drugs, healthcare, and foreign aid. It's a really fun one. Enjoy. Share, rate, do whatever you got to do. Subscribe, guys. It's Scrotus POTUS.
I'm very proud of my daughter, Ivanka. If she weren't my daughter, it would be so much easier for her. Might be the only bad thing she has going, if you want to know the truth.
Everyone, welcome to Scrotus POTUS, another episode, another great episode. People ask what Scrotus means. It is so-called President of the United States of America. POTUS, obviously, President of the United States of America. We're talking America. We're talking world politics. We've got Dave Fulton here, originally from America, now living in London. Right? Yeah. Welcome. Thanks, Dave. And Craig Campbell, originally from Canada, global citizen, now living in the UK as well. Yeah. We're all global citizens here.
Yeah.
Enjoying ourselves. We had a big thing last week in Hamburg. G20, huh?
Well, it wasn't really G20. It was G19 plus one.
The America's on their own. Is that sort of the policy?
They really are. I mean, it used to be the G20. You know, the American president show up and everybody would be like, "I want to stand next to him because they have the contracts. They got this. They're the big boys in the block." Blah blah blah. Woof woof woof. And now it's kind of like, "Hey, how are we gonna swing this without him?" Oh God, I guess we can. Oh, my God. We didn't need them all these years.
But didn't he kind of circumvent everybody by sitting down with Putin?
Well, I mean, that was the big thing. Everyone's waiting to see what's going to happen. You know, it's going to be, we have to talk, I guess, about that election kind of thing.
Yeah.
Hey, was there hacking? Was there not? Is it just a big sham on us all? I mean, does anyone really care?
Do you follow the now, you know, the red herring potentially of CNN's disclosure, the unintentional disclosure that it is actually an entirely a red herring? Do you follow that?
I don't fall. I mean,
it complicates things.
I've always believed. I mean, CNN obviously has gotten themselves mired in sort of their reputation and what they do.
Yeah.
I really don't subscribe or believe in a lot of traditional mainstream media.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, everyone on Facebook knows everything, so why not just go there? those people. Come on, they know. And they do
well,
with emojis.
Yeah, before we got elected, they kind of, you know, some guys, some very, very sharp individuals who were up on, you know, cybersecurity and everything else kind of went, wow, there's this huge fucking river of information pouring into the American, you know, political agenda, and targeting the DNC, and it's not just some 400-pound fat fuck in a, you know, trying to play games of Thrones or whatever in his basement. They are definitely, this is 24-hour day, 7 days a week, trying to hang into this thing, and it wasn't, yes, it was in the intention of, let's just fuck with this, you know, if we can, why wouldn't you?
I mean, there's so much information out there, so it can be used and construed to anyone. I mean, I don't know how many people have actually gone and used WikiLeaks to their own advantage. I'm not sure.
No, nor do I. But I also, in the same category, I don't know of any information coming out that points directly to Russia out of even the WikiLeaks caches that are determined that they couldn't just be, as you said, a 400-pound fat fuck in his parents' basement. Well, that's the other thing.
Well,
about
some of the heads of the security guys who have appeared on anything from news programs to Bill Maher trying to grab headlines have come forward and said that there's a disproportionate amount of information coming from this, and they were sourcing this, that, and the other. So much for that, you know, President Obama kind of threw out 25, you know, Russian dignitaries. Said, yeah, tomorrow morning you got to get on a plane and get the fuck out.
Yeah.
They still haven't given them back their land either.
Yeah. Yeah. And as well, you know, but Trump wants to give them back the land and pay for the bills that they incurred while they were gone.
So, sorry about that.
Yeah.
I mean, what really happened? What do we think really happened between Trump and Putin? I mean, there's already trouble with this guy here.
I think that Putin was playing chess, sorry to interrupt, Dave, and I think Trump was playing, like, you know,
checkers.
Maybe Chinese checkers, actually. I was trying to think of the ones I know how to play as a reference point. Yeah.
I don't think that Trump and Putin were directly connected in that respect. You know, do I think that the Russians tried to interfere with our U.S. elections?
Every minute, every day.
Every fucking time they could. You know? Yeah. And the thing is, with Trump, it's not a matter of, like, if you're the president and you want to instill confidence in the United States, the best thing you do is go, well, holy shit, everybody's talking about this, let's fucking dive in on it, as opposed to just going to tweet going, I think this is false, fake news, blah, 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 sad. No, you got to clear up any kind of doubt in the American public.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't do any of that, which raises more suspicions, you know?
Well, because they said that, he said, I guess, in their sort of series of tweets, that he said that we talked about it, and that Putin did acknowledged it and said it didn't happen, and Trump didn't fully believe him.
Yeah, well, I think Trump, he didn't fully believe him, but in the same sense, he didn't fully disbelieve him. Wasn't it kind of like, we just left it at that?
Agreed to disbelieve.
You know? Well, I mean, you've seen the photographs between, you know, Obama and Putin, and the look on their eyes is fuck you. Yeah. Fuck you. And Trump is kind of like, you're going to buy my steel, right? Yeah. You're not going to foreclose on the loans I got from you, right? Yeah. You know, that kind
of
thing.
Well, here's one of Trump's tweets. Putin and I discussed forming an impenetrable cybersecurity unit. Did you hear that election hacking and many other negative things will be guarded.
Did you hear what the Republican Congress, like McCain?
Well, they were just like,
this is probably the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my life.
Did they say that?
Even Trump came back and go, maybe it'll happen now.
Amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. And Rubio. Rubio said it as well.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Because, yeah, I said it also. No. I just didn't confer with those guys because I happen to know one of the foremost, hackers in the UK.
Yeah.
And one of the first things that he confided in me, he introduced himself as, I knew that he was a hacker beforehand, but, you know, we casually were having a conversation and he introduced himself as, I'm a bank robber. That's just like, you know, happy side yourself, right? But the second thing that he disclosed to me was that if it's online, like most of us, I'm sure everyone in this room knows, if it's online, it's not secure.
Yeah. Yeah.
It has no potential to be secure. And the idea of making it potentially a war crime if you penetrate what is already an insecure server or construct, that's inflammatory to say the least.
Yeah.
Because, as you know, like, we could kick up my Mac here and see what we could do.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't constitute a war crime no matter what the hell.
No, of course.
Well, a buddy of mine, who's an architect, one of the brightest people I know, when I first started getting involved in emails and everything else, he just said to me, don't put anything online that you're not willing to step out in front of your house and scream at the top of your lungs to strangers.
And I thought it was funny. On a billboard across the road.
Exactly.
From your,
and I'm like, Jesus. So, and as a result, that's how I've kind of, you know, done. And I did a show, a couple of years ago, and they're like, okay, here's the online profiles of everybody on the show. And there was like 9 pages, 10 pages, 13 pages, hand mine, 2.
Yeah.
Not even 2 full pages. And I said, is this all I found? Yeah, that's all we found. And I go, yeah, you know why? Why? Because that's all you're allowed to look at.
Yeah.
That's it.
I think only a lot of younger people sort of adhere to that knowledge as well. Because a lot of people slow down on the tit shots from a 16-year-old?
Well,
the celebrities just keep putting their stuff up there, and they wonder why their cloud, the iCloud, gets hacked. And it's like, it's such an easy thing to hack.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think the subtext is that they'll be looking for punishment for breaches.
Yes.
I believe. That's because that's really all they're left to do. They're like, you know, a bit like cops, actually, just kind of show up. What happened? A crime a while ago.
Creating like a morality or a law on people who then break the rules? Because I mean, a lot of people that want to stop that are people who don't like free press. You know, a lot of people who don't like the freedom of the press don't want to have a lot of stuff.
Well, they
get
want
out there.
Freedom of the press for the stuff that's going to follow their agenda.
That's good for them.
Exactly. I mean, because in America, I was telling her, we have this newly formed kind of right wing groups. They're called the Oath Keepers or the 3%ers.
Yeah. Okay.
Have you heard about these?
No,
guys?
I haven't. But please,
you have.
Yeah,
of course.
I've heard of the Oath Keepers.
They're essentially ex police military guys whose, you know, their bylaws are, we are going to
uphold
the Constitution, First Amendment, no matter what it costs. And then I got on, you know, because when I was back in Idaho, I sent them a little tweet going, hey, having a Black Lives Matter rally, can you guys run security? and they said, we don't consider that a First Amendment issue.
They just answered it friendly. Wow.
So, yeah.
Wild.
But in their old kind of like, mission statement is like, oh, we're on racial blah, 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 this and that. I'm like, but the upside of that is, you know, can we get rid of them right now? No, we can't. You know, but they're all 50, 60-year-old guys.
Sure.
So the generation will overturn because their kids...
It's a senile insurrection.
Yeah, the kids will start dating Black people, which will make them go, I can't...
You would hope so that we get back. Yeah. I mean, when you're back, you mentioned you're back in the States. What was the mood like? What's everyone thinking when you're back? Where you're in America?
I was from North Idaho. Yeah. And I went into my local sporting goods store, and there is a tremendous amount of firearms for sale. There's a wall of freaking guns. And I went and asked a guy a question for a friend of mine here who shoots competitively. I said, hey, he wants these, this, and that. And he goes, what's this for? And well, Tony, why don't you just do this? And I mean, well, it's for a friend of mine in the UK, in London, England. He's like, England, why do you want to live there? And I'm like, well, I don't know, maybe single payer insurance, you know, this and that. And he kind of brought up the whole London Bridge thing. And I said, you know, dude, you know, London is millions and millions of people. And from the time those guys jumped the curb.
Only a few of us get stabbed every couple of days.
Yeah. Jumped the curb to the time they had bullets in was 8 minutes. You can't say that in our town of 44,000 people.
Yeah, well.
And then he... And then he goes, yeah, yeah, that's a problem. He goes, but you know what? I think Trump's going to get this sorted out. Wow. And at that point, I'm sitting there going, all right, I'm in a gun store in Idaho, you know, staring at an old guy with a gun on his hip, surrounded by assault weapons. And you go, okay, how are you going to choose your words? And I just kind of went, I wish he'd stop tweeting. He's like, yeah, all right, fine. I go, got to go. You know? You just think I could be here for days or just, and you're never going to turn these people over because they still believe. I mean, the Trump election was the fallout. It was a, it was a protest thing. You know, it was kind of like, I don't want the way things are going and I'm going to do this and we're just going to let's see how that happens. And there are some that are just going, you know, my accountant is going, you know, there's some people that didn't necessarily vote for him, but just kind of go, this is hilarious.
Yeah.
This is hilarious.
What percentage of blame do you think or do you feel personally that you can give to the DNC for self-sabotage within the context of that?
Oh, like, huge. Huge. Even Bill Clinton and Barack Obama told Hillary Clinton, you were ignoring the base that got us elected.
Yeah, and betraying.
Yeah, and betraying. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, and I think the DNC...
people who will actively not vote for you.
And I think the DNC has a huge, you know, amount to, you know, to be called out for. For turning their back on Bernie Sanders, you know,
throwing him under a bus,
criminal.
criminal charges with his
wife,
and
that's why that's a little bit, you know, I'm not partisan.
Which, by the way, Idaho was Trump and Bernie Sanders. That'll give you an idea.
Okay, yeah. It's very pertinent in that kind of environment.
Yeah, and do I think a woman one day
Trump
will be
after that?
Yeah, do I think there'll be a woman president one day? Of course, you know. Yeah.
But is it going to be Nikki Haley? I don't know. I doubt it.
Elizabeth Warren.
Is there a sense though of people that there's hope with Obama or that they just want to ride this out?
One of the things that affected, and I, after talking to friends of mine, and I said, you know, obviously I can't let go of the obvious racism undertones with Barack Obama, especially up in the North Idaho area, because there is inherited racism over in the Silver Valley where the lead, zinc, and silver mine is.
Some of it slips over into Alberta.
Oh no, really?
Yeah, those racists don't even. Some of them don't even recognize the borders. Though.
No, they don't. It's just a cool breeze of racism. Goes across the border.
What happened was there was a huge miner strike in 1899, and they completely lost control of these three towns. They called the U.S. government and says, oh, my God, we can't control them. So the U.S. government sent in a National Guard unit that was all black, and they put the miners down. I mean, they put them in stockades. They couldn't even sit down. They were that tightly packed in.
Sounds like a British government.
Oh, yeah. And so as a result, you meet people that grew up with a grandfather and a father that learned that, you know, black people are this. And they never even seen black people, but they don't like black people for some reason.
Because they're authority figures who put them in chains?
Yeah, but they don't even know why they don't like black people. So then they see... miners' lives matter.
We're spelling miners with the E, not the O, right?
Right. Then you see, you know, and the thing is with... You had Bush obviously got us, violated, 1441 of the UN, get us in a war we don't need, everything else kind of crap. But they weren't directly affected by that. And then the ACA comes up, also known as the Obamacare, comes in and goes, everybody's got to have insurance. It's going to cost you this, this, and this. And for a lot of people who have no money, which is like a lot of Idaho people, oh, my God, no, I'm insured for $50 a month. But the other people who had to buy insurance, their catastrophic insurance was no longer applicable. That was they were paying $60 a month for, which, by the way, would deny them for pre-existing conditions. Now they're paying $270 a month. And like, okay, so they suck it up. A year later, now it's $600 a month.
Wow.
Because all the people that were supposed to buy insurance to offset the things, insurance companies and the pharmaceutical companies could maintain their profit margin, didn't fucking do it. So they just raised the premiums. And the problem with the Obamacare thing is it didn't go far enough. It didn't reel in on the insurance companies and the pharmaceutical companies. So they fucked the U.S. population under the guise of this is now the law. And the Democrats recognized that was an issue, but they didn't fucking do anything about it. And then when they tried to, and of course the last 6 years of Obama, Mitch McConnell, who I'm sure is going to burn in the very fires of hell with forks up his ass, his number one goal 2 weeks after Obama got elected was to deny anything this man has to come up. And now he's like, how come we're having bipartisan, support? He's like, because payback's a bitch, you old fucking sloppy motherfucker. That's why.
So, I mean, when a lot of that... Go ahead,
Craig. Is Trump Care going to fix anything?
No. It's actually... The biggest thing with Trump Care is it gives a huge tax break to the 1% of the 1%. And it's going to...
They need it, though. They're struggling.
Well, the trickle-down economics never worked. and it cuts $840 billion from Medicaid. So people like my father and my mother who had to take Medicaid toward the end of their lives would now be denied.
Wow.
What happens to offset those costs is asset seizure. So now you're extending that gap of wealth because now rich people can buy, the people who are going bankrupt's houses. because the cancer sick. Came back the third time.
Wow.
And that's it. Man.
Chasing the tail of,
yeah,
of that
exactly.
pain.
Exactly.
So, I mean, because Trump's coming back to America now, and he's here to fix Obamacare, because it seems to be, or they're fixing of Obamacare, the repealing of it. And they don't have a lot of time because a lot of the Republicans are falling out. They're not sure what to do. Is there a way to salvage this? Is there
you know
a way to give healthcare?
You know what's crazy about that is when they presented the new Reed Whitten one that the 13 pricks in a dark room came up with, and you know after it had their you know satanic cabal and came back and go, we fixed the one that was passed. Is there's Republican senators who are looking at this going, if I vote for that, there's no way you're going to see me in 2 years.
Yeah.
You know? And then there's other senators who look at that going, okay, we're going to do this and this and this, and we're going to get these tax breaks and blah, 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 this, the rich people. And they looked at them and goes, doesn't go far enough.
Yeah.
And you're like, you haven't killed more people kind of thing. Yeah.
Not sinister enough.
And Ted Cruz, who I don't even know why this
Canadian
guy takes
Ted
a breath.
Cruz.
Of, yeah, takes a breath of fresh air. Yeah, I can't. I'm not going to put him on you. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
there's
no,
a good reason
fine.
Why you guys are no, never
he,
go. He's actually Canadian.
He left his citizenship. He was born there, but he took his American citizenship, and we're fine with that. Stay. Yeah. You got him. You got him now.
Yeah.
Enjoy.
It's like giving someone gonorrhea. Here you go. Sorry. Hey, what are you going to do?
Which, could you also know that with the Senate, you know, health care, with anybody, government worker, the kind of, especially elected officials, the new thing, each state can kind of, you know, dictate whether or not you will be covered or will cover for pre-existing conditions and stuff. And some of the Republican senators actually come out going, if you're in a state that will deny you coverage because you have a pre-existing condition, you should just move to another state that won't deny you coverage.
That seems smart.
Simple.
Yeah, just move.
You know that job you had, the house, the family, the school?
Bring your back.
Fuck
that. Yeah.
Get over to the next state.
Wow.
Go bankrupt in the next state.
I mean, obviously, coming from Canada and living in the UK, we're struggling
never
to deal.
Never worry about it.
we struggle to deal and pay for, and obviously, healthcare, we seem to be losing more and more.
Yeah.
Is it feasible? How feasible is it to suddenly
fix everyone?
To insure and give everyone health in America when you've got competing interests?
We already have a healthcare. We have a single-payer healthcare system already in place. We have the infrastructure. It's already there. It's been there for years. It's called Medicare. You know, and it kicks in when you're 65 or 62, depending on, you know, when you were born. And all you have to do is, and they've talked about this, Medicare for all. All you have to do is just kind of go on, hey, you know what? Maybe we should take over the building across the street and make single payer for this and that. Now, you know, big problem when they first started putting, you know, the national insurance thing, the question toward the American people at the beginning of the Obama thing, the Republicans and, of course, the lobbying groups are going, fuck that, man. This is socialism. This is communism. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and the next thing, and I really actually saw this back home. If you do this, that's socialism. And you know what comes after socialism?
Communism.
They take your guns.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So people are like, fuck that. Well, you know,
socialists love
and
guns.
And now my friends who are like, voted for Trump,
yeah,
you know, Obamacare is bullshit, all that kind of stuff. I say, okay, how about this? How about this? How about we wipe all your insurance out? No, this and that. But we taxed you 9% to 11% of your income. And you get full coverage, not dental, full fucking coverage. Would you sign up for that? And now they go, yeah. Yeah. And you're like, it's too late. You fucked
you
up.
You had that
right there, but you went, no, I got to have the gun. You know?
Wild.
So why don't it seem simple when you say just extend Medicare or Medicaid to everyone?
No, not Medicaid.
Medicare.
Medicare. Medicaid is for people, if you're below a certain income level and you can't afford insurance, Medicaid kicks in. Now, it used to be that Medicaid, years ago, it was paid for by U.S. taxpayers and allocated, you know, by state as they seemed fit. You know, some states had a balance of budgets every year, some didn't, whatever. And because they made massive cuts during the Clinton administration and during the Bush administration, these states had shortfalls, so they had to revert to asset seizure. So that's when my mom died in 2004. She was on Medicaid for 19 years. When she died in 2004, my dad, 8 days after she was died, was handed a bill for $316,240 and change.
Wow.
And said, please make payment available or list her assets so we can take those assets and pay back the thing. And my dad's like, fuck.
Wow.
Fuck. And you know, and the way you can avoid that is you give up all your assets 5 years and a day prior to applying for Medicaid.
Then
but how
get
the
Medicaid.
Fuck? Yeah, but how the fuck do you know when you're gonna apply for Medicaid? You
know?
And my dad couldn't give away any of his assets because it'd be all retroactive. You know.
So how did you settle a bill like that?
You don't. You inherit the debt.
Wow.
So my dad. And so the thing is like you wouldn't seize. You know, they go, okay, now you inherit the debt. So my dad had to, you know, was sitting there 8 days after my mom died in a lawyer's office. The lawyer's kind of like feeling very sorry for him, and he just said, look, that's the way it is.
Wow.
So after you pass away, the state could. They always say may. They never say we will. They
at
may.
At their discretion.
We will come after. And he said the state of Idaho is number two in the nation for asset seizure. And he said, but your dad can sell all his assets off, you know, while he's alive, spend the money however he wants, and they can't do anything about it. But he can't give it to you. He can't give you a lump sum. Can't do this, can't do
it's
that.
It's bound by that.
Yeah. So what I did is I paid fair market value for my dad's house, all legal up and down, and then rented it back to him.
Okay.
Wow.
Wow. Yeah. But it's
and it took 9 fucking years to get that fucking plan in place.
And people go to the post office and shoot strangers in that country? How does it happen?
How does
it
happen?
I can't see it happen.
I guess it all comes down to two in terms of the fairness. I mean, I don't think I've been to the doctor maybe in 10 years.
Right.
And I think it comes down to a point.
Oh, you're the guy.
Well, how insurable, like how much do we have to cover everyone? I mean, then it comes down to this, the part of the state. How much are we responsible for everyone's health?
One of the problems I think we have in America is we have our lifestyle choices have taken a back seat. I mean, all my friends from, you know, Canada and
adventure maniacs.
And also a lot of friends from the UK and Europe, when they go to America, the first thing I said, how'd you have a good time? Oh yeah, I went to San Francisco. This friends of mine, they went on their honeymoon in San Francisco and Vegas and stuff. And one of the second things he said to me is like, Jesus Christ, I can't believe all the ads for like pills. Yeah. You know, for
and
medication.
The disclaimers as well.
Yeah, you know.
This will give you a heart attack. It could give you an erection while you're having a heart attack and die.
Alikathon. Oh, my God. If you're having problems with this and that, maybe life would be better. Take away this, take away that. You know, warning may cause erectile dysfunction. Yeah. Thoughts of suicide, this and that.
Contributes to death. Widespread.
Yeah. You know, there's a big drug now that if you have terminal cancer and you take it, it could add 6 months to your life, you know. And then one of the disclaimers is if you take this, you could die the next day.
6 months or a day.
But you know what? These ads are really, really well produced. I mean, they're amazing ads. Yeah,
I know. Music videos. Especially if someone who's an actor being in an erectile dysfunction ad, you know, it's good pay.
What's that pay?
Scale.
And you get residuals.
You get residuals. You don't get them here. Yeah.
It's not $1,500
for your erectile dysfunction.
Yeah. For your erectile dysfunction video.
The national commercial of you sharding yourself.
That's one of those things where if anybody teases you, they're going, hey, Craig, I saw you had an erectile dysfunction video. What's up with that? I made $35,000. The residuals was paid off my house.
I'm still making it.
Oh, wow.
Letter on the way there now.
Well, I've done acting in the U.S. and commercials and acting in commercials here. And a commercial in the U.S., I mean, I made a couple hundred grand off one of them.
Yeah.
Except if you're the Canadian Revenue Customs, I didn't make anything. And the other ones over here, I made like 800 pounds. And they're like, it's a buyout. Like, are you kidding me? 800 pounds?
Oh, wow.
So
hideous.
But I mean, it's economy of scale. I get into it. I'm an artist. I don't care.
But you know, the thing is, I've done a bunch of stand-up shows as well as you and like, never mind the Boss Cox. And I always know when I appear on the reruns for Comedy Central or Spike or some shit. Because you've probably seen this. Yeah. You'd be on the train and somebody gives you this. They look at you and you're kind of like, why are you? Oh. And they go, do I know you? Mm. And you're like, yeah, do you watch television? Yeah. I'm the guy who played the murderer. Oh.
Yeah. I've had that when I was on the train with a woman. Because I was on a show called Undercover last year. And I played a bad guy. And a woman's like, I don't like you. She saw me in the tube. She's like, I don't like you. I'm like, what? She's like, you're on Undercover. And I was like, yeah. It's like, I don't like you. I was like, it was acting. She's like, I know, you were good. Yeah. I just don't like you.
You know you're good when they don't
you're
like
just like
it.
All I can think of is God, I'd love to fart right now. I just really just
that's
something.
When you go, oh, thank you.
Yeah, you're just thanks for liking to hate me. So with legalization of marijuana, obviously a statewide thing that's bringing some huge money in.
State of Washington, classic example, bringing in billions. State of Washington, it's bringing in billions.
And Colorado. They said today, apparently, Vegas or Nevada, Las Vegas is going to run out of pot.
There's a few fundamentals regarding this that, like, I've personally explored, and I think, like, for public information is good to cover, that federally in the states, it remains as bad or the same as reefer madness.
Of course it is. They have to collect their things in cash. They have to pay everything in cash because they're not allowed, and they can't get loans. They can't deal with banks and societies.
Who are we talking about?
Anyone who's it's a marijuana dispensaries or anyone who's running a marijuana thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not because it's federally...
But it's taxed.
It's federally legal. They still have to keep the tax, but they have to keep it as cash.
No, I'm talking about the legality. If you're, like, going down from Vancouver, where it is now definitely legal, into Washington State, where it is definitely legal, recreational, across the board for adults at the 50 meters, 25 Canadian and 25 US to go through the border, that is very much federal.
Oh yeah. And you don't say a damn thing.
And you don't say a damn thing. And if you are asked, and this is now a known thing, if you are asked if you have ever smoked marijuana in your life and you admit to an American federal official that you have done that, you can be at that point banned for life from ever entering the states for a felony, for admitting to a crime.
There was a case where recently, because in Idaho...
Most Canadians don't know that.
Somalian passport probably wouldn't help me there
Most
either.
People have the, I'm not smoking now, I don't have any on me
mentality. My favorite, who has an officer?
Yeah.
You know, that kind of,
Pull up!
Why, you want to do a bowl right now? Come on, man.
State Idaho. In North Idaho, there's the panhandle. It's 72 miles across, right? Now, in Montana, you got medical marijuana.
Yeah.
In Washington, it's all legal. Happy days, right? But Idaho, zero tolerance.
Right.
Zero fucking tolerance. Yeah. And so
state to state.
Yeah, and what they do, and I talked to, you know, one of the sheriffs in Kootenai County.
At the state line?
Rocky Watson.
They just said, watch him?
Rocky Watson.
That's his name. Yeah. He's great. He puts these big signs up about a few miles inside the state going east that says,
by the way,
safety check up ahead.
Wow.
You know, police safety check up ahead. And they sit there with infrared goggles.
So all the potheads are
and they're
rolling
like,
up.
Fuck! And they pull them over. And he goes, then we send the dogs on them. We don't find the dope. We find the money. And he goes, and they're so stupid. He actually said this to my accountant. They're so stupid. They keep the money in the same room where they grow the pot. So the dogs find $250,000 in cash, which, by the way, we can impound.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And if you want to come back and justify how you got this, you know, if it's your real job and everything else like that, if you say, well, it's growing dope, you can't do that in Idaho. So he goes, these guys regularly have fucking, you know, closets,
bags
of marijuana, of cash. But there was a real famous case in southern Idaho. It happened a couple of years ago. A kid coming back from Oregon, driving back out to Illinois, had a Kia pot in the trunk of his car. Cop pulls him over.
Through Idaho.
Cop pulls him over and goes, hey, your taillight's out. Kid goes, really? It was working fine before. And he goes, yeah, just get it fixed, you know, just let you know. Kid goes, well, it might be a loose wire. And the cop, it was great because it was an article in the paper. And he goes, I told them, that's fine. Just get it fixed in that stoplight. You know, next time. He goes, well, maybe I can
like
do it
you.
Now. Yeah. So he pops the trunk and the cop goes, whoa, what the hell you got in here? Yeah. And he's like, well, I was just in Oregon.
Stop.
And he goes, no, back off. And he goes, and he finds a Kia pot.
Yeah.
And he goes, you can't have this. And he goes, oh, I just bought it legally in Oregon.
Yeah, yeah.
He goes, you're not in Oregon. You're in Idaho.
Yeah.
And he goes, yeah, but I bought it legally. You're in Idaho. And he told the guy, I'm really sorry.
Yeah.
I have to arrest
you. I'm afraid I have to arrest you.
And he arrested him for possession and possession with intent to distribute. And he was sentenced to 20 years.
Wow.
He's not going to serve 20, but he's sentenced to 20 fucking years.
Yeah. Jeez.
You know.
Another great story that tells you never go to America.
Yeah,
American
tourism's hurting as
a
result.
Avoid Idaho.
Yeah, and that's another thing too. But American tourism is hurting really bad.
Yeah,
yeah. I was at the beginning, the first couple of months of 2017, the airlines, you know, there was like almost a 300,000, you know, person drop in sales of tickets just to fucking L.A.
Well, yeah. I've seen it in Florida. But even with pot, I mean, the pot culture, because I was thinking, you know, when you're talking about the medical problems and you're talking about people not having insurance and you see how much money is raised, what if one state were to say, we're legalizing marijuana and we're giving free health care, all the tax is going to pay off the health care to people? Because basically you've got this new economy, you've got this new money coming in, this new revenue stream, and you have an old problem. People are sick. We have this thing that we've now classified as being, you know, not that bad for you. Can we not take the taxes and the money from marijuana and pay off the health care? But, I mean, do you think there'd ever be a state or anyone who would do something like that where it's like trying to find simple solutions to
expensive
problems?
And the reason I say that I can't point my finger what state or the other is because now states, you know, ever since the latest, you know, where the Trump administration is going, hey, we have to crap down on this voter fraud. So all you states, we want you to give us all information of all your voters and the last four digits of your Social Security number, and you know, and luckily some of the states are going, I'm sorry, what did you just ask for? You just wanted to fuck my sister in front of me? Is that what you just said?
You know? And we know that makes bad babies at a crisis
point. It's one, as an outside observer, it's one of the few things that gives you hope in America's future is when the states are, I remember when Utah was having trouble with the fact that federal NSA property, you know, collating everybody's information from the beginning of time, and Utah's like, well, we're not into that. Like, constitutionally, we don't agree with that, although the actual building is federal and there, and they were like, you know, talking about unplugging it basically because, you know, it's just a big refrigerator making sure that all that stuff doesn't disintegrate, right?
Yeah,
I love it when the states get uppity
because I'm a big believer in home rule, which is why would Washington, D.C. know what the fuck Coeur d'Alene, Idaho needs on a daily basis, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, right now. Probably needs a couple new bridges across the highway, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, maybe the state can kick on that. But, you know, the basic core stuff. We got a meth problem. How are they going to fucking help with that? We got an opiate problem. You know, I don't want them. It's kind of like, let us do the trickle-down kind of thing.
Yeah.
As opposed to stepping up and going, hi, we're the federal government. We're here to make sure nobody invades the borders of the United States. Oh, by the way, could I see your Social Security card and all your vehicle registration? I mean, you're like, well, yeah, I want to know who the house belongs to, which, you know, this voting history.
Yeah.
I'm like, whoa, no.
Why?
Just, Just keep the commies off my back. You know, that's all you got to do, for fuck's sake. And so, and it's nice to see, like you said, it's nice to see the states push back a little bit. And, you know, and some of it obviously is not going to be, you know, in the way you like to go. Some of the states are just going to push, you know, push back and kind of go, and by the way, no Syrians. What was that? You know? I mean, my state actually, when I, during the election 2016, I actually saw, it was in July last year, big posters of guys going, you know, such and such, Reagan Republican, which to me is kind of like, I'm kind of ignorant, but I just want to make sure to let you know I'm really fucking ignorant. and one of my and one of the platforms
they
guy
really
was running
do
on,
Trump with that these days, don't they? As a positive, like, you know, I'm a Reagan Republican, like as though you're gonna go wow,
the Reagan the last year Republican,
good for you.
The guy who fell asleep at foreign policy meetings, who cut the CDC and made the AIDS epidemic just fucking blossom. But also, and then the other thing they put on there is, well, I work my best to prevent Sharia law from overtaking Idaho.
Wow.
It's a big problem there, is it?
Sharia law? It's right up there with fucking Bengal tigers.
Yeah.
Of course.
The one that you did touch on, though, I was interested because when I was back in the States, I was talking to a police officer from Ohio, and he was telling me
about... Yeah, a gun on you.
No, he was he was actually quite wasted in a pool. But it was in Florida. But he was telling me about the huge heroin, he was calling it the housewife heroin epidemic that they have. Because I guess, you know, with pot not being legal there... No, they didn't have fentanyl, but just heroin.
Wow.
And you can buy heroin for under $10.
Like, again.
And because OxyContins are $80 to $90 of pop.
And a lot of them were hooked on Oxy, and a lot of people were, you know.
They're going back to heroin.
So, yeah, because it's cheaper.
Heroin's cheaper. So he says a lot of the cases they have is women starting, they'll have a glass of wine and start drinking wine after they drop the kids at school.
Yeah. And think, how can I stretch
shoot up
this?
Some heroin.
Wow.
Or smoke some heroin.
Yeah, smoke the dragon.
They smoke
some
heroin, do some more wine, pick up their kids at school. And he said, he was like, we had like 40 arrests in 1 week.
Yeah,
of these
functional
housewives.
Opium addicts.
Oh, my buddy Joe, who's a captain in the fire department in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, he says, yeah, every shift, there's two hotels up on the I-90, I-95 intersection there.
Overdose festival.
Overdose, because guys are like, you know, I was addicted to Oxy. I'm like, I got me some heroin. Oh, my God, I got, you know, for the price of one pill, I got this fucking pile. Well, let's fucking do this up. And then, bam, well, it was a bit too much. Boom.
I have a couple of friends who are paramedics up in Victoria, Canada, and they were giving me a bit of an overview of the fentanyl.
The fentanyl is huge in Canada.
God.
It's really big. They're
with
cutting
the situation. anybody that's listening to this, it's worth like just looking up fentanyl to see. Like,
Order it though. Just look it up.
I believe, without exaggerating, I think it can be 10,000 times stronger than heroin.
Addictive,
like,
stronger
it's bananas. Like, you Wikipedia that, folks. It's like, it's bananas. Like, you can't even fathom, like, oh, that drug that we took last night, it's it was 10,000 times I expected it to be.
It's the Scotch bonnet of
Is that jalapeno?
I like Tabasco.
But they're just, they go out on shift, and it's like your fireman buddy, and it's just a death fest, and they have some type of antidote. And they are short on the antidote, like Canada-wide, so they know when they're getting thin on it and it's still early on a Friday, Saturday night, they know that that just is death.
Yeah.
They know that means people...
You know, I was listening recently on BBC World Service and they were talking about the opiate problem in the United States and why they don't have that issue here in the UK. Right. And not that they don't dole out some kick-ass fucking painkillers, but it's when you're in the hospital. And when you're out of the hospital, they're like, yeah, you're done.
Yeah.
And you go to your local GP and like, I had this in the hospital. Well, good for you.
Yeah.
Good for you. That's it. That's it. Then you get here's some new from Plus with codeine. Happy days.
They don't have the commercial for it.
So they don't have
it.
That. And, you know, and of course, you know, there's not the back end of that, the commercial end of that. But it's just like and this guy said in the health department, health industry over here, just said, we do not give those things. Our doctors do not prescribe those things to a guy walking in off the street.
Yeah.
And over in the U.S., it's kind of like, hey, you know, I got my back. And OxyContin. Well, if I give enough of these fuckers out, I get a golf holiday. You know?
Yeah,
and
of course.
And that's what happened. We've become the product of our own demise and greed in that.
Yeah,
respect.
In some way it's sympathetic, isn't it? And then it can be a lot worse. Like I think Canada sort of sits in the middle of it to some degree because I noticed over here moving to the UK. I don't know if you guys have like delved into dentistry in Britain, but it's just like one of the first things you notice is they just have a real aversion to killing your pain.
Yeah,
like and certainly you know my experience in Canada was if you come in and you're like in the waiting room, first thing they do is just like, you're in pain. Dun, 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 dun. What's the problem? Please, you know, as soon as you just quit screaming and crying. And the UK, the first time I experienced it was in London, and a flatmate went to the dentist. He was like, he was that guy. Like, 3 hours later in the night, comes home. What? You've come from the dentist? He's like, yeah, I gotta, you know, go back in a couple of weeks, kind of thing. I'm just like, but they didn't give you anything for that, like for the couple of weeks bit. And he's like, I'm like, wow. And that, you know, I don't know how that plays out worse or better, but you know.
I've gone to the dentist. Yeah, I've had them do the, you know, okay, we'll do this, blah blah blah, root canal, bridge, whatever. I had a cap. And he, you know, dead it, little bit, like, getting in there. And you're like, you know, you feel that? And he goes, just, you know, here, hold on real tight. We're almost done. Okay,
hold
there we
on
go.
Tight, we're nearly finished.
It's
kind of
like, you know,
yeah,
I mean,
like it's
how much is this shot of Novocaine?
Yeah.
Is this like fucking tiger's tears?
Yes.
You just can't give shit up or what?
Utterly, but I'm going to interject again just to say that I, right now, we haven't spoken for quite some time, and I don't think I mentioned to you last time, but maybe I did. I, at this minute and since the 29th of December, also have a broken back. And I can say that is, like, to anybody listening, that is a gateway to getting the good stuff.
Yeah,
I can honestly say, you know, like no hesitation at all. So, once your back is broken, all the goodies, kind of every cupboard you didn't know open before
I broke my back in 93.
Okay, yeah. So you've had that wheelbarrow of funhouse. You
know, I didn't realize I booked the broken back show.
Yeah, exactly.
We are the broke back.
Pull out your CT scan, everybody.
Broke back. No.
Broken back.
So, but it was in the States when it happened to me. It was in a climbing accident. And I remember, I can't remember what they gave me for pill-wise.
Just remembering being from Alberta, the number of people that I know that were really upset about Brokeback Mountain. Actually, like, you know, emotionally affected in their personal lives. Yeah. You know, they're not all like that, you know? Just like, holy Jesus.
But I remember waking up, I like, promptly, like, six, when they're going, oh, God, and you grab one, and you put it in, and you chew it on it, and you could literally, within 15 minutes, go,
back to sleep.
Okay, I can take a shit now, you know?
Yeah, I remember those days as well, waking up when the pain cycle came back.
Yeah.
And having beside the bed the, you know, the ready to go.
Yeah, and, also, and because of that, ever since then, some of the calcium's built back in there, and they've done it. You know, like, yeah, it's come a bit because there's a compression fracture of the L2 vertebrae. I mean, serious fucking one. And the he said, you have to keep your core solid.
Yeah.
You have to, you know, you have to do a certain amount of sit-ups, certain amount of this, certain amount of that, doing other stuff, keep your core solid. And me being going, yeah, right, there you go. And I remember sitting down for six weeks working on a script project and not doing anything but sitting. And then, you know, going, oh my, it felt like somebody, give me your wallet. Yeah, and that's what
guy's
it was.
Voice in the background.
Yeah.
Well, you mentioned about the pain, because when I was growing up, my dad, whenever he went to the dentist, he never got any pain shots. He just did it.
Was he Buddhist?
And so I was doing a show once in London, Ontario, and I had to do a show later. He just didn't like the feeling of the drug afterwards.
Okay.
He didn't like the, he just, didn't and he's like, it. And then he's like, you know what? Your body takes care of it. Your body has its own pain system.
Yeah.
And so I was, before I was doing a show, and I was like, don't give me any shot. And they're like, what do you mean? I'm like, just do the thing without it. And it hurt like shit for the first 3 minutes. But after that, your body's just like, go away. Yeah. And I didn't feel it.
Natural
and
endorphin
and
rush.
It's your body just sort of shuts that off. It was this sort of natural pain off. And you're like, okay, it was uncomfortable, but I didn't have that foggy headed, because I hate when the dentist, you come off, you're just like, and it takes a couple days, you know, just sort of get off of it.
Then you become like Jack Nicholson in a Little House of Horrors. You're going to every every dentist trying to go for the pain rush. And all.
Yeah.
I know Dave must have the same experience I do regularly on motorcycle moment where you just, you know, think that you saw a 2x4 across the, you know, the passing lane or whatever at 80, and you just have that, you know, and you just feel like, what, you know, whatever part of your deep brain just, hey, I got you there. I had you there, man.
Yeah.
We were ready to go through a wall together.
Yeah.
You know, like, I'm sure that that's a natural bit of your
We were messing with you.
Yeah.
The other thing I want to talk about, I want to jump into this foreign aid. You know, we're all looking at this foreign aid and how it's given away. I mean, America is the number one giver of foreign aid on the planet.
Well, it used to be.
Well, it still is by money, but not by, you know, in terms of per capita. I think Sweden, then UAE, then Norway, Luxembourg, Denmark, Netherlands.
I love Norway is taking their profits from, you know, the oil and buying rainforest and just sitting on them.
Yeah.
You know?
Norway's doing, I mean, they made, I think, equally as much as Alberta did.
You know,
and Alberta's gone broke, and Norway's all rich.
Norway's dirty secret is ammo. And I know this, like, it's one of the pet embarrassments of friends that I have that are Norwegian. They're really, like, they're not a people who are very comfortable with the fact that they're selling armaments.
Oh, they're selling, they're big
and
arms.
Lots. They're big on it.
Big oil,
and
big arms,
And, you know, for a place that that hosts the Peace Prize, it's a bit of uncomfortable bedfellows, that.
So I was
especially when they don't need the loot.
Yeah. And like, but I mean, with the oil money, they're saving it for a lot. I think they say that every person there is worth $1 million bucks as a result of saving.
Yeah, I think it's 1 million kroner.
It's a million kroner.
Like, yeah, 100,000 for each person. To get.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, it's all right.
But I mean, in terms of aid, when you look at the UK, where the UK gives their aid, number one country, Pakistan.
Wow.
Number two, Ethiopia. Number three, Nigeria. Number four, Sierra Leone. Mm-hmm. Number five, South Sudan, Syria, Tanzania, Afghanistan, Bangladesh, and India.
Wow.
I mean, I guess it comes to a point when you start looking at foreign aid and you look at countries and, say, America giving your money. When you're giving money to help out equalize the planet, how, because there's multilateral and bilateral. You give it to the multilateral big agencies or you give it to the smaller agencies. I mean, how much are we supposed to help people?
Well, I'm a firm believer. I like the NGO attitude. You know, mm-hmm. it's one thing to write a check to the government and go, you know, you look after your people, so I'm going to write you a check, and you're going to look after your people, right? And you you read off the names of these countries, and you think, we gave them how much for what kind of thing?
Yeah,
I remember years ago, I mean, Craig and I used to gig a lot in India, and I talked to a guy one time who was very, very successful businessman. And at the time, India was experiencing 8% GDP, which mm-hmm. is fucking amazing.
Off the charts.
And I said, wow, that's, I mean, you are leading the way. And he goes, we can't maintain it.
Yeah.
There's no way. It'll drop. I go, why? And he goes, because we can't take care of our own poverty. The poverty will drag us down because we cannot do that. And Bill Gates, while I was there one of the weeks I was working, came to India to talk to the richest people in India and says, why don't you start looking after all the other people? And the people, all the rich people he talked to, their response to that was, hey, it's Bill Gates. You know, that was it. You know, and you see a level of poverty. I mean, I saw in India that just, you know, there are times it just brought me to tears.
Yeah, there's got
to
be a fundamental.
But I also love the time, the way they treat drunk drivers. Remember the guy with the switch? He was, you know, we were like walking back from the club, and the cop was like just beating some guy on the scooter.
Yeah,
we got to the point where we're watching, and Craig was like, we should probably move on.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, no, let's not make eye contact.
Yeah, yeah.
I think there's a factor, just because you're talking about India, and I'm thinking in terms of like poverty in the UK and Canada.
Yeah.
We just glide right past it. Like, we don't have poverty, and you and I both know we have
huge native poverty. Probably small town poverty as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So I think that probably a subtext of what we're talking about is it's a caste system.
Is
what we're dealing with. Like, when you have extremely, as we have seen, like the only reason we were there is because they had a 250 million burgeoning middle class come out of nowhere, which it was identified.
Western educated middle class.
Yeah, which, and the reason that it was considered middle class is that you needed to make 22,000 pounds a year, you needed your own house, you had hot water in your house, and you probably had a family car.
Okay.
That was the 250 class, million. Yeah. In consideration of India. So the idea that that's like, you know, burgeoning, that's, you know, increasing, but at the same time really not doing much for the poverty. And if you're talking about like being around like actually wealthy industrialists who are just happy that they've met Gates, that's not leading to like the super poor, other than has happened since, you know, Vishnu showed up, however many, you know, so I think they were still across Southeast Asia at that time. They just have, like, it's a detachment.
Mm-hmm.
It's a detachment. And, we have it in our in our lives as well. It's the fact that the United Nations is looking into some of our native reserves in, you know, Northern Ontario, Northern British Columbia. Yeah,
and in the States,
starvation,
too.
Yeah. We, in Canada?
Starvation, opiate problems, suicide, everything.
And we in America, on top of that, and just not because, you know, we can't afford the vaccination, we can't afford the healthcare issues, you know, because a lot of the, you know, the poor, the poverty-stricken, and the lower working classes are not going to go to the hospital or the doctor until they go, figure it out, just looked at, you know, one of those things. And on top of all of that, on average, 8 children, when we're talking about 18 and below, are murdered every day, you know, as a result of gunfire.
Yeah,
you know, they are shot every day. Not necessarily by the cops, you know, or it's a wrongful shooting, but they're shot every fucking day. So, and now, is that a class issue as well? You fucking right it is. You know,
there's also a subterfuge going on as well that bothers me somewhat, that we're talking about this, like, you know, sort of phenomenon of our humanity, when underlying all of that is that we're also deeply involved in unjust wars.
Oh, of course.
We're
yeah.
deeply involved in creating poverty through creating chaos, through creating real, you know.
But deep... wars make jobs, Craig.
Yeah, yeah.
It helps the economy.
For some,
And kind of brings it back around to the healthcare issue is, like, you know, it used to be healthcare was, you know, the importance was, kind of like, hey, you know what? We have these famines, and we have, you know, we have these, you know, these pestilences. We have the Black Plague. We have this. We have these diseases that will wipe out huge swaths of people. Well, those we've pretty much eradicated those.
Mm-hmm.
Now the big health issue is lifestyle choices. So it's like I'm incredibly obese. I don't really feel like fucking working out. There's got to be a pill I can take. You know, yeah, there is. But you know what? It's $80 a pill, and you need 4 a day. You know, one of those things. I mean, I have a friend of mine, and she was diagnosed with this very, very rare disorder, and her pharmaceutical bill every year is $80,000.
Wow.
You know, does she need, you know, these two shots a month at $1,500, $1,600 a month? Oh. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But, you know, but her insurance people who are like pencil pushers are looking at this going, that seems pretty expensive for a shot in the ass.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Can't you just do a lap? Well, no, you know. And that's another thing, too, is I think if you do get insurance and you do show a certain amount of healthy lifestyle and you're taking care of yourself and you get your cholesterol down and you're, you know, not, you know, past your, you know, body mass index for your height, weight, size, age, guess what? Maybe you get a fucking cut, you know? Maybe instead of paying $100 a month for insurance, you pay 65.
Hit some targets, yeah.
Yeah, those people tend not to tap into it. And I think one of the things that's ignored and being dealt with by some countries, like Finland being one of them, is the price of poverty. Poverty is expensive. It's really, and it's expensive on so many different categories.
And that's why they tax the shit out of alcohol and cigarettes.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. You know, because like,
because they're luxuries.
Yeah. And that's why it's 11 pounds a fucking pint.
But they're finding like living wage for their street people is way better for, and I've always felt that. I'm a bit socialist that way. So, Dave, don't go for the girls. But I've always felt like, you know, it's just better if people are smart.
Sure.
It's way better. It's way better. It's better for you.
If you never meet them,
if you're on a bus and you don't even know that they're smarter, it's just better, right?
which I think that's the key to the whole thing is education is fucking number one. Because when I was going to high school in Coraline, Idaho, I remember being, you know, senior high school, having the principal on the public address system coming on and going, hey, we know this fall is hell is hunting season, and a lot of you guys are going out at first light 5 o'clock in the morning, mm-hmm. trying to get your deer or whatever. You got to be here at school at 8. We'd appreciate if you did not keep your rifles in your school locker because the school can never be responsible for theft. And I saw kids in class going, God damn, I gotta leave it in the truck? What the fuck? And now you can't even go on with like a bottle opener or some shit like this. And I think a lot of that is education. I mean, we would have, you know, I remember classes about gun safety. This is not a toy. This is what will happen. Boom, 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 boom. So we all, and everybody who's roughly my age, give or take 5 years on either side, is kind of like, why would you go to school because you're pissed off at the math teacher because you didn't do your homework kind of thing? But yet this is happening.
Mm-hmm.
And the accessibility for military-grade weapons is also a big issue. So I'm a firm believer in, you know, in education, bringing the gun to school. This is what's going to happen. I've had, you know, debates with people online and otherwise going, oh, my God, you want to bring a gun to school? You know, and this is why people are bringing guns to school, because you think, well, you shouldn't bring a gun to school, so it's going to happen.
Yeah, I'll show
you. So if
you
bring a
gun
to school and go, this is what it is, this is what's going to happen when you pull the trigger.
Yeah.
You know, this is what it's for. This is what
it's
not for.
Mm-hmm.
They exist. You know, walk it off. Now, the lofty idea that the Europeans and the Brits and the rest of the hee-haw gang goes, America just got rid of their guns. It's never going to happen.
No.
Yeah.
It's never fucking going to happen.
Yeah.
We have 350 million guns in America, roughly, and 26% of the population owns, like, you know, the majority of those guns, which, you know, and by saying that, that's people who own 5 guns or more.
Yeah.
You know, now that does that make them crazy? No, mostly not. But, you know, which kind of maybe since my dad passed, I inherited guns. Now I have 7.
Yeah.
So I'm one of the crazy guys. And somebody said, why do you have 7? I go, well, I inherited a couple. I bought one. And there was that sale. I'll never own an AR-15. What? $300? So, yeah, but, you know, but I think it just comes down to education for everything, not just necessarily about firearms, but also health care and lifestyle choices. Yeah. But
street people are expensive is my point.
Yes.
And
that
they're, you know, they're expensive for smashing your car window and taking your garbage. They're expensive for insurance because of that,
mm-hmm.
you know, and the idea that we should have people who are really having trouble and around. And all of, it's mentioned by strangers all the time, and you and I, we've all noticed this, that there is more street people than there was 5 years ago, than there was 10 years ago.
Yeah.
It's a very noticeable thing for everybody, and
it is.
You know, I try personally to consider, you know, they're the people that you meet in your neighborhood, you know, like they're human also,
sure.
And you also see those little reveals on the internet regularly of, like, you know, what was the last one, the guy who used to be a linebacker for the Cowboys, Dallas Cowboys, being attacked as a street person, people are, they used to be functional,
yes.
A lot of them, Mel B just blew 38 million pounds.
Well,
like,
so she says in a divorce proceedings when she's guys coming after money.
But you know, her poor isn't going to be good for anyone.
Yeah.
A lot of soldiers are lost. Tons of soldiers.
We let go.
High percentage. Yes. Yeah, if they haven't killed themselves, they're generally on the street.
Yeah, and they're left, and then people are like, they've sent this person off to defend the country, and then you've come back
and
you just left them.
Utterly.
There used to be. I remember years ago when I first started coming over here, there was a bunch of us that rented a room in a flat south Waterloo Station, and you'd cross a Hungerford footbridge. And there was a woman there with a baby, you know, the shawl around him, please help me, please. And you're like, okay, here's a pound because you got a baby. And then you come back 2 days later, another woman, same kid.
Yeah.
You know, they're just passing the kid around. You're like, oh, then they did that whole thing about there are
babies on drugs. Have you caught that one?
Oh.
Like sedated babies being passed. I was going to bring up as well the only thing worse than being an ex-serviceman is being an ex-serviceman who was definitely injured via being in the military. And there's, you know, major cases of them just like literally kicking the can down the road, just waiting for them to die.
Yeah.
Hoping that, you know.
Yeah, exactly. We're not going to buy your prosthetic leg. Yeah, hopefully you just go off and die.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And delaying tactics specifically to prevent that payout. So. We're living in insipid times.
We're going to start winding it down, but I want to ask you, because this is the question that, you know, Donald Trump is always talking about, make America great again. I'll start with you, Dave. How do you make America great again?
You make America great again by hoping that Donald Trump will just stroke out at one of his fucking press conferences and take down half the Republican Congress. I think, you know, America's always been great. That's the fucked up thing, you know. There's aspects and parts of America that are not, you know, like any other place, you know. And the idea that he's created this false idea that we're in really bad shape and this and that, it's made enough people via his direct connection with the undereducated and tweets and shit. That they're like, oh, well, this guy's a billionaire, so he must know what the flavor of the month is, so I better follow that kind of thing. But if you realize, like, are we being invaded? Are we doing this? Are you doing that? No, and there's ways to make things, you know, improve our lives. You know, we have to fix healthcare. We're the richest, most powerful nation on the earth, debatably. Yeah. But, you know, we can't even take care of our own fucking people. You know, but yet we'll continue the idea that, you know, we have to, you know, create the wealth and maintain the wealth because other people are going to take care of us. And that's the delusion America's got to do. I guess the biggest thing for America, in order for them to be great, is we have to take a big fucking ugly dose of reality and go, you are not going to be a billionaire. You are not going to invent anything. I'm not trying to stamp on your hopes and dreams, but you know what? If you want to be a carpenter, be a good fucking carpenter. Raise your family. Are you going to own a house? Maybe not. But you know what? That's okay. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to let it go. Are you going to be doing better than your parents or your grandparents? No. But, you know, I'm sorry. It just didn't work. But, you know, why can't, you know, I've been cheated. I've been this and that. And it's because of the black guy. No, it's not. It's because your idea that you feel an entitlement. You know, that's a big thing with America. There's an entitlement thing. And there's a, you know, USA, USA. And they've got to realize, and I think that'll happen after the G20, the 19+1. You know, attitude is the rest of the world will go, all right, well, if you guys don't want to play ball with this, we'll just go over here.
They're marginalized.
Yeah. Yeah, and which, by the way, the 1% of the American population who are the billionaires, you know, the 450 people in the states that control 200 million, it's the same income of 200 million Americans, they're going to make money off that, you know, because they're going to go, okay, I'll just take that over there and invest in the Japan-European deal, you know, and I'll take that and invest in it. They'll be fine. Mm-hmm. But the schmo on the streets of Houston or Oklahoma or Boise, Idaho, you know, they're not going to see that. And do the politicians give a shit? Fuck no, man. So I've been irritated enough at times I've ran the idea of Bassett, go, maybe I'll run for office in Idaho, which all my friends said, don't do it, because everything you've ever done
even
that
if
it was
you
remotely bad will come glaring out in that respect. I mean, look what happened in Montana. They had the guy who was like the multimillionaire running against the folk singer, essentially, you know, a Democratic equivalent of Bob Roberts, you know. It was happening. Well, healthcare's going to be a problem. Did you see that guy?
No.
Hilarious, man. Yeah, Rich was telling me about it. Didn't win.
No.
Yeah, and the Republican.
Kept the guitar.
And the Republican, who throttled the Guardian reporter, slammed him down on the ground the night before the election, did win.
Wow.
You know.
USA. So, Craig, how would you make America?
Well, can I say, in a group of comedians as we are, let me first start with, like, the compliments, and I do agree with the sentiments Dave said, that America, on so many levels, of course, is great, and as a room full of comics, free speech.
Yeah.
Just, you know, beautiful. Considering, like, what we think is our free speech, both in the UK and in Canada and around the world, like, America, you know, carries the flag for so many great things. I think the next really... the only big step that can change things, and I'm bouncing off of something that I read about, like, how do we deal with, we haven't brought it up, but it's a big bugbear on the planet right now. How do we deal with North Korea? Mm-hmm. How do you deal with, like, somebody who's like, you know, and I'm like as far left as you can get, you know, without going to National Socialism, like rational left.
Yeah.
The fact that, you know, I want to be sympathetic to North Korea. I know they've been dicked around on a billion different levels. I know the story from the outset of North Korea in a way that, like, I'm sympathetic to the fact that, like, we really treated them badly in the Korean War, really, really badly. We carpet bombed them in ways that, like, in fact, it's created an asymmetrical warfare network from the North Korean standpoint that makes them a very formidable force, because they know never again are they going to isolate or congregate large armament stores because everything gets hit. You know, the idea that they're, like, basically like SAS bricks, but there's millions of them, and the fact that they can, you know, hit South Korea with conventional weapons very easily makes them formidable. And it's terrifying that they're testing missiles that might be able to hit
Alaska.
Know, Alaska. Mm. All these things is the case. But the only I only see things moving forward when America finally, again, Martin Luther King, Kennedy, finds its humanity. Mm-hmm. When somebody who's in charge, and that's, you know, another thing that I give grace to, that, because I've traveled in the States recently and a lot in my life, and Dave knows, you know yourself from being in the States, you run into that cop in the pool in mm-hmm. Florida. You do. You run into the people from Guadalajara and the great taco restaurant on the beach in Oregon. There's awesome people.
Oh, yeah.
Although, not just the planet, yeah. But America, of course, they're, and they're you know, people of faith, and they're people of strength, of humanity, and they don't want a cache of nuclear weapons that can multiply, you know, the planet's destruction. By, you know, how many times can we destroy the planet over and over? It needs, someone has to stand up and quit being a murderous, threatening, terrifying force of what's the word I'm looking for? Like
evil.
I was gonna go evil, but I didn't want it to be cartoon. Yeah. I'm talking about like I have fear. You have fear. We have fear when there's saber rattling in the South China Sea. We all act differently.
But authoritarianism is not going to cure this.
Authoritarianism is never going to. Maybe getting rid of a bunch of the older silos might be better.
Yeah.
Starting to, like, you know, to clean up waterways that are infected.
See, I believe there is that person out there, and when they
and they're going to take a bullet so hard in the head the second they peek over the parapet. Really,
but there'll be the guy who comes up with that, or the woman who comes up with that, or whoever, you know, the LGBT guy who comes up with that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's going to be those things where they're going to put this in motion, and everybody's going, this is really great, and then it'll enact it, and the whole country will, like, what the fuck? Oh my God, you mean that nuclear missile that I thought was going to get, and now it's, you can't move it, but it will happen. And you will not, you know, it'll all come to be. The country will be better for it, but the person will be incredibly unpopular.
Sure.
And then 10 years after all this is enacted, history will go, Jesus Christ, that guy was
what
fucking...
What were we doing?
What were we thinking?
Yeah.
And they'll name high schools
mutually
after
him. Mutually assured destruction
there'll
is
be,
just
there'll
like
be
mental.
Fucking national parks named after this person.
Of course,
because
if you have any left by then.
They haven't sold them up. That's the problem. Yeah. That's the thing that really concerns me.
Yeah, of course,
they
wanna, as a climber.
They want to make, you know... It happened in Southern Idaho. They gave up one of the national parks. It wasn't a national... It was a BLM thing, state-controlled. This Texan billionaire came in and said... Hey, you know, I'll manage it for you. And everybody was going in there and hunting for years and years. Right. And one hunting season that came in, it was like last fall, and there was a fence around the whole thing, 265,000 acres.
Wow.
And they're like, wait a minute, we've
formerly
always came
federal.
In. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
sorry, it's just like it needs that.
Yeah,
that has to happen. There has to be an acquiescence. Somebody, and I just to run away for a second again, it bothers me that in both the most recent election in the States and the most recent election here, that's not on the cards.
Yeah.
Nobody has that on the table. And it may just be that it's an unpopular political point, but the fact that, you know, you can't argue that Clinton would be better than Trump right now because she was more maniacal than he was in terms of, like, what she was outright saying conflict-wise was her agenda. And we have that, you know, same in the UK, that there's just no nobody is stepping up and saying that we don't want more of this, you know? Or maybe it's the money in it.
And I think it's once we start devolving politics and business, and
here we go.
You know, when we take those interests away and we allow politicians to run on humanitarian issues and run for the people, not for the interest of other ones.
Yeah, the weakest people.
Weakest.
When you take away the politics and business, then you're not going to have a Granville Fire situation.
You're not going to have that kind of collusion. I'm going to end it here, guys, just because it's been a good chat, and I want to chat about this more. I want to thank you guys for having me on. I like that the fact that we can discuss, as North Americans, global issues from our perspective, but hopefully to make the world a better place. And thanks for being part of it.
Don't put that on my shoulders.
Yeah, thanks,
guys. Cheers.